Welcome to the podcast series from the ESRC National Centre for Research Methods at the University of Southampton. In this podcast, Michael Schober from the New School for Social Research in New York talks about his research on the shared understanding between improvising musicians. He starts by explaining the motivation behind this work.
From my own experience as a collaborative musician and pianist working with others, I've been just intrigued on how and when it feels like we are fully in sync and when it doesn't. And I think more generally, I've been fascinated with what philosophers call the problem of other minds for my whole life. How is it that people other than us are experiencing in the world? How much when we think we're fully understanding each other are we? How much are we missing understanding each other and don't know it? That sort of thing.
Now, as part of the research that you've been doing, you carried out an experiment to test this. Talk us through what it was you wanted to do and why.
So we were interested in this study. This is with my collaborator, Netta Spiro. The extent to which two musicians who've never played with each other would characterize what they're doing as they play with each other in the same way as the other. And if they don't happen to characterize it the same way, the extent to which they would agree with their performing partner's interpretations of what happened, and whether that agreement would be any greater between each other than with an outsider. So the idea was to get performing musicians who regularly play together, and we selected the genre of jazz standards, in which musicians regularly end up playing with people they've never played with before, following the shared script of what a jazz standard brings with it. And we wanted to test, just find out in a single case study, the extent to which their understanding would be shared and wouldn't. And it seemed to us, since as far as we can tell, nobody's ever really quite asked the question this way, almost any answer would be interesting. Musicians certainly regularly can feel that they have a strong affinity and a really shared being in the zone with a partner that feels really special. And we wanted to interrogate that and understand it better.
So when you got the musicians together, tell us what happened on the day of the performance, as it were.
Yeah, so we got two musicians who had agreed to participate. We did not tell them anything about what would be happening. We brought them to a performance space at the New School in New York City through entirely separate entrances so that they wouldn't have a chance to see each other or talk with each other. And we set up the stage with a visual barrier down the middle of it. So each came in from the other side. So there's a pianist and a saxophonist, both performing musicians in New York City. And we brought them in and explained to them that we would like them to play three variants of the same jazz standard, with the only restriction being that they couldn't talk to each other at all. So they couldn't see each other, they couldn't talk to each other. We wanted to make sure that how they interpreted what was happening in the interaction musically was really based just on the music and not on any stereotypes they might have about who the other player was based on their appearance or anything they might have said to each other. We wanted it really to be just about the music. Now, of course, this is different from many live performing situations, but it is not so different from what happens when people play with each other in recording studios and play along with tracks of people they've never met, right? So it's not an entirely unfamiliar situation. So we needed to figure out which piece they could agree to play, and so we had a list of jazz standards that you would expect most performing musicians to be able to play well. And we had them circle the ones they felt comfortable playing today and picked one from that list. It turned out to be It Could Happen to You. The instruction was for them to play three versions of this standard without ever talking with each other. The only thing that we needed them to be about 5 minutes long each, and to have a silence in between so we could tell when one started and the other stopped. And we wanted them to be quite different from each other. Other than that, we left them to their own devices and wanted to see what they would do. Immediately after the performance, we whisked them out of the room separately to different rooms and an interviewer spent about an hour with each of them asking a number of questions. We also had the outside expert listen to the recordings and answer the same questions and make the same judgments. So the kinds of questions we asked, first we asked questions from memory about how would they describe the differences in the three performances they just gave? What was the difference in character, difference in quality? How easy or hard it was to play with their partner? Was there anything that struck them as particularly interesting or notable that their partner did? Did they feel that someone was in charge? Did your partner make choices you recognized that you picked up on or rejected? Those kinds of overall descriptions from memory of what had just happened. And then we brought in audio, the audio recordings we had just made, and the interviewers asked the performers to listen to each recording and then comment moment by moment on what they thought worked and what didn't, how they knew what to do next, what struck them as particularly interesting or notable about what their partner did or about their own performance, whether there were choices that they picked up on or rejected, that sort of thing. And we asked the interviewers to be extremely attentive to the performers' faces as they were listening to the recording, in case there would be a smirk or a glance at a certain moment, and if the performer didn't happen to mention anything about what happened at that moment, for the interviewer to prompt the performer and say, "You made a funny look right there. Can you tell me why?" So we get as specific descriptions or characterizations of what the performer thought had happened as we possibly could.
So you got that immediate reactions, but you also went back to the musicians a couple of months later. Why was that? And explain what you got them to do there.
So our question was, first of all, the extent to which the two performers would independently characterize what happened the same as each other. And a second question was, when they don't characterize the performance in the same way, to what extent would they agree with their partner's interpretation or characterization? So we, over the next 2 months, we listened to these audio recordings and extracted every precise statement we possibly could from the interviews that expressed something about a moment in the playing or about the partner or about the playing. And we anonymized those statements so that one couldn't tell who had said them. So if the sax player said, "At right here, I started a new chorus," we transformed that into, "At this point in the recording, with minutes and seconds, the sax player started a new chorus." Right, so we anonymized all these statements and we created a questionnaire out of that. Oh, and we also got all of the statements the outside listener also made and anonymized those to get. So now we had three different people's characterizations of what had happened, two of them being the performers and one the outside listener. We created a questionnaire with all of these statements in the order in which they appeared, but with no evidence about who had said them. And we sent the questionnaire to the performers with the audio recordings, asked them to listen again now, 2 months later, and to now rate each statement for the extent to which they agreed or disagreed with it. Again, with no evidence on who had said the statements, whether it was the partner, whether it was somebody else. So they spent about an hour listening again and being very careful in their judgments. Very, very precise. You can tell from the notations they added to the statements where they would say, "Yes, I think that happened, but I think it actually happened a few seconds earlier than you're saying," that sort of thing. So they were very, very, very careful.
What would you say were the most interesting things to emerge from what they said?
They endorsed their own statements that they had made 2 months earlier most of the time, 80 or 90% of the time. They endorsed a slightly smaller proportion of the statements that the outside listener had made, but they endorsed a notably lower proportion of the statements that their partner had made. This was surprising to us. We sort of anticipated that the performing partners might agree with what had happened more than an outsider might. But in this case, at least for these two players, they endorsed what the outsider said more than what their partner had said. We also used statistical measures of inter-rater reliability, Cohen's kappa, to measure the extent of agreement. And by that measure, the agreement between the two players was actually quite low, low to poor on their statements, and their agreement with the outsider was higher in both cases. So the sax player agreed with the outside expert more, and the pianist agreed with the outside expert more than they agreed with each other's statements.
So would you say that your findings shed some sort of new light on this whole idea of the shared understanding that takes place between musicians when they play together?
Yes. The caveat is that it's a case study with one pair. And so what we're really showing is what can happen, not what always happens. Right? But at least in this pair, it's pretty clear that it is possible for performers to improvise well together. And or I think they're rather good, actually. In any case, to improvise as well as they did without having fully shared understanding, and that their understanding with each other, it is possible for musicians' understanding of what happened with each other to not be privileged relative to an outsider. And I think that goes against some musicians' feelings about what might be happening during an improvisation or any performance with another, where you can feel that you're in this mind meld or state of true shared understanding. Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes that doesn't happen, and it may be the case that there are times when two players are absolutely mentally in sync and fully, breathing with each other and seeing things the same way. But it's also possible, you could hypothesize, that maybe for an improvisation to be interesting and successful, maybe the two players need to not be thinking too much the same way. Maybe it would actually be a boring improvisation if the two players were fully expecting and anticipating the same thing. Maybe part of what makes it fun and exciting is that the two players are not mentally on the same page.
Michael Schober was talking to Christine Garrington about Jazz Improvisers' Shared Understanding, a Case Study, which forms part of his presentation at the NCRM event Methods for Studying Creativity Ahead of the Curve on December 16th, 2015.